This is Kate Moorhead Carroll in the podcast Find It. Today I have with me a licensed mental health counselor, Denise Warner. Denise is well known and respected in our community, where she has been practicing individual and family therapy for 25 years. Denise, tell us about why you wanted to be a counselor. What was it about that that interested you?
Well, I can't imagine doing anything else. I never explored anything other than being a therapist. It just feels the most naturally me. I feel like I it's not even a trade or a job. I just feel like I'm able to go to work every day and just be authentically myself.
Who you are, it's very much who you are.
And it, very much a calling. I feel very much like I'm in a God space, like I'm being used the way that God wants to use me when I'm, I feel the most used by God when I'm in a therapy session.
It does become a sacred space.
It's very much a sacred space.
I've certainly felt that with you.
Yes.
Yeah. And people are fascinating, aren't they?
Every client I've ever had is fascinating in some way. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because you can sit down with them and you can ask them the questions that you want to ask them, and you can get to know them in a real way. So being able to share that sacred space with somebody, I mean, every human being can be fascinating in that way.
Mm-hmm. As you have 20 years is a while, how would you say, what are some of the issues that seem to be coming up today that maybe weren't as prevalent when you began? What are some of the things that are facing people today that seem to be more prevalent?
Ironically enough, kind of what we're talking about today is the stress, the fracture in relationships. Ironically, we have a loneliness epidemic. At the same time, all of the things that are leading us to find our own sense of not being distressed anymore lead us away from relationships. Does that make sense? So they're kind of related.
Like, interesting.
In order for me to not be distressed, I need to move further away from this relationship, but yet we have a loneliness epidemic.
Mm. So people are isolating themselves to get away from the anxiety, but yet that's not really where they're called to be, because
right.
They're not satisfied being alone.
Which is why conversations like this are so important, so that we can understand how to exist in that distress, how to have a disagreement in a relationship, because we're going to have disagreements in a relationship and still maintain the integrity of the relationship.
Why is it that people are more distressed by disagreement? What is going on that causes such stress over not agreeing with someone?
Well, I think our culture right now is telling us not to be distressed, that somehow the distress is intolerable, that disagreement in relationships is not normal. And so we don't know what to do with the tension of that anymore. We don't really have the skills. Well, and let's add in all the social media and all the that is, I think fueling that and cultivating that. And we have some, very big topics right now in the world that we're dealing with. So I think all of that creates a perfect storm. Really the lack of tolerance for the distress. And so I'm finding in my practice a lot, I'm going back to teaching a lot of distress tolerance, a lot of skills in how do we disagree with people that
there,
we love.
There are so many things there to unpack. So in social media, we're made to feel like we need to convince someone of something right then, like instant food, instant argument, mm-hmm. that if you don't agree, there's a problem and you're supposed to fix it.
Yes.
Why is that? Is that because we're so fast food or instant oriented?
Well, I think that's part of it. And then what happens is then that triggers our nervous system. Then we're dysregulated. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, it changes us from a civil discourse to now we're in fight or flight. And when our nervous system is triggered, then we no longer, then it's a different animal. We no longer have access to the part of our brain that seeks connection. We're in fight or flight, right? So we're
tell us a little bit
mode.
About that. So there are different parts of the brain. So you learn in one part of the brain, and then fight or flight, you call it, is a different. Can you elaborate on that?
So when there are different parts of our brain, right? We have a reasonable part of our brain where we're going through our day-to-day life, where we're connected to what our commitments are, we're connected to what we most care about, where it's who we really are. And then a threat happens, and then in our brains they're not really good at understanding the difference between a physical threat, a bear coming at us,
right,
or if it's an emotional threat. So we can respond to an emotional threat much like a physical threat. And when that happens, when you're in your fight or flight, when you're in your survival mode, you're just concerned with winning, you're concerned with survival, you're concerned with dealing with the threat at hand. And that's not, it's great when you're dealing with a bear. It's
right.
Not great when you're dealing with somebody that you love and care about and you want to maintain a relationship, because you can't access the part of your brain where your love exists, where your empathy exists, where your...
Where your flexibility exists.
Where your flexibility exists, yes.
Interesting. So why are we so afraid? What is it, the media that's made us so afraid of disagreement that we feel like we're going to die? That sounds like in some ways we think the world is over or
yes.
something.
Well, and I think that's part of the problem. And that can be very individual. Our political opinions, let's think about that. They're not really just opinions, right? They're not really just our beliefs. We turn them into our identity, or we turn them into... they're where our morals live. So it's not just an opinion. So it does feel like a personal challenge when somebody disagrees with us. So it's understandable how that provokes that part of your brain. But what we have to do is recognize that, this is not really that type of threat.
Right. And for some reason, when someone disagrees with us politically, we feel that it threatens our character or the way we live our life. It makes us feel like we're standing on fragile ground.
Yes.
All of a sudden.
Yes.
Which means that we're not grounded in who we are
exactly.
we? Exactly. And why are we not grounded in who we are? What's going on with us Americans that we're so fragile?
Well, I think the identity politics, right? Specifically about the politics. We think that we are our opinion. We think that we are, we're so fused with our opinions that we think that's who we are rather than what we believe or what we think. And then once you do that, then again, you are no longer, or it's, I won't say it's you're no longer, but it's harder to access the part of your brain where you have empathy, where you have the ability to be reasonable. And that's a good thing if it's really a bear.
Right.
If it's really a threat, you don't want to have the ability to access empathy. That can be contrary to dealing with a physical threat. But when you're in a relationship, and you love this person, your ability to access your empathy, your ability to access your reason, your ability to even access impulse control is important. But we, and fueled by social media, fueled by our intense political system, we're even more fused, and we do see it more as a threat to our identity when somebody disagrees with us.
It's interesting how Jesus said, love your enemies, but we can't love our enemies if we can't calm ourselves down, because love doesn't live in that fear, fight or flight.
It can't.
So tell us then, we get into a disagreement and it gets upsetting to us. Give us some ways that we could bring ourselves back into that place of creativity, that place where love is possible.
Well, I love that the prayer this morning was about breathing. Mm-hmm. When I teach my clients about breathing, when they have something going on, they're like, "Oh, yeah, breathing. That's gonna solve a lot." But it helps trigger you, or it helps move you from fight or flight, from nervous system activation, into a safer place, so that you can begin to believe, "Okay, I'm safe. I'm still in disagreement, but this is not a bear."
Right.
This is somebody that I care about. And you can stay in disagreement. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Disagreement doesn't cause relationships. That doesn't cause the most harm in relationships. Contempt, disrespect causes the most harm in relationships. So back to how do we move from fight or flight or nervous system deregulation to being in our authentic selves. Breathing is a great place to start, because deep breathing is incompatible with being in your
fight or flight.
Fight
yeah,
or
we
flight.
Hold our breath when we're really frightened, don't we?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So breathing takes you back to regularity.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and for us, we think it's God. Yahweh is, so we're literally yes. getting back in touch with God.
So for those of us who are believers, like that is how we get in touch with our spirit self, right? How
right.
we get in touch with, and so breathing is a great start. It doesn't solve all of your problems, but it is how, because when you're tense and you're shallow breathing, you have no choice but to be in fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
deep breathing is the best place to start. So I love that you started with the prayer this morning. And then it's reminding yourself cognitively that this disagreement is, whatever it is that I'm afraid of, this fight, this disagreement cannot cause my greatest fear. This conversation that we're having together, even if it's a disagreement, even if I feel emotionally activated, it's not going to cause my greatest fear. This conversation is not.
And that's where the media does us such a disservice, because we're made to believe if you don't, that the other side is going to destroy the world. Like, both sides think that. The other side is going to destroy the world. If we do what they want, we're going to basically either be at war, or we're going to pollute, or whatever. So we get into that, if I don't make this person agree with me, the world's going to end,
right.
kind of thing. That's where we've been triggered by the media.
And it's okay to ultimately believe that that may be happening. I mean, we don't need to let go of our deepest convictions. It's okay if we believe that. The problem is believing this conversation
right.
that you and I are having, if we're disagreeing, that this conversation is going to cause that. And so then it elevates this conversation to that level of needing to protect myself, as opposed to, I can safely engage in this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And ironically, when you get back into that safe place, you have the potential then to truly change someone's mind. There is a little bit of a possibility there, whereas there wasn't when you were in fight or flight. That wasn't going to, you can't be a peacemaker in fight or flight.
No, yeah. No, because your brain cannot connect in fight or flight.
Mm.
It's not supposed to, but it can connect if you are calm, and you can speak the truth. You know, I mean, being calm and not being in fight or flight does not mean that you are not speaking from your own convictions. This is not, it's not about not sharing what you believe is true. It's you're more likely able to be curious about the other person. You don't have the intensity level of trying to convince you, because I feel this intense need to change your mind in this moment.
Right, the urgency of that.
And then when I'm in the urgency of that, what I'm very likely to do is, by any means necessary,
mm-hmm.
yelling, screaming, being contemptuous, being disrespectful.
Well, let's take a couple scenarios. So a lot of us have relatives that trigger us. Not me, but anyway. And some of them like to throw out little bombs at you, or they'd like to, you know, say a political thing. And what do you do when someone's just trying to trigger you? How do you deal with that?
Well, and the truth is you really don't have a lot of control over your triggers. I mean, if you're triggered, you're just triggered. So it's just about having awareness that I'm triggered. Like, and then your brain is flooded. And when your brain is flooded, then you have less choices. So the first thing is just recognizing, I'm triggered, that did it. And by now, most of us usually know what our triggers are. We usually know who does it, and we usually know what they say in order to do it. So recognizing, I'm triggered. There's different levels. Like you can be so flooded that I just can't engage in this conversation right now.
You just have to leave or say, I can't talk about
that. We'll talk about this later.
Right.
But when you're engaging in an emotionally important conversation, regardless of what it is, there's going to be some degree of emotional activation. So this is not an either or, I'm either activated or I'm not. Of course you're activated. But not coming from there, right? Like not leading from there, recognizing that I am emotionally activated and that I'm triggered by this, but I don't have to respond from there. I can respond from my reasonable brain, from the part of my brain that still loves them, that still wants to connect with them and maintain relationship.
Is it helpful to think about their vulnerability or something about them that you feel compassion for? Does that help?
The most important part, because again, in your fight or flight brain, one of the wonderful things about being in survival mode is you can't have empathy for the bear. You're not supposed to have empathy for the bear. You're not supposed to have empathy for somebody who's trying to harm you, but this is not that. Mm. And so being able to see the other person's humanity, being able to see that I can separate the issue from the person. Mm-hmm. Being able to, I mean, if you get down to the heart of it, that this person is probably coming to this opinion, even though we disagree, from a place of wanting safety, from a place of worrying about their family, from a place of fear and wanting to take care of themselves. And I can relate to that. I can't relate to where this opinion took them. I can't relate to that, but I can relate to they're trying to meet a basic human need. Mm. That's probably about some form of safety for them.
Yeah. And then what do we do if you get to a place where someone does start really mistreating you or yelling at you? What do you do then? Just walk?
Call it out.
Okay. Give us an example.
Depending on the relationship, right? But, I mean, you can say that, okay, that's hurting my feelings. That feels disrespectful. I want to hear your opinion. I'm open to hearing how you got there, that feels disrespectful.
Uh-huh.
That's hurting my feelings. That's preventing me from being able to share with you.
Good. And if that doesn't work, then enough, I can't have this conversation anymore or something like that.
Right. I mean, I think I wasn't here for the last conversation, but I think you talked about people that we cannot have conversations with. Mm-hmm. And so barring that, right, if we are in a conversation with somebody we believe to be a relationship that we want to have, you can set a boundary just for now, right? You can say, look, I think that that this is getting too intense. Maybe we'll try to talk about it later.
Mm-hmm.
That's sometimes the best thing to do.
There is a kind of miraculous thing about time. We're in our culture, we want everything to be fixed immediately, but over time, things can change in ways you could have never imagined, especially if you pray about it.
Yes.
So giving things time can be helpful.
Yes,
right?
And people evolve over time.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and I mean, in my practice, I've, you know, seen people move through issues, move through and be able to see things, you know, from a different way, different perspective, and people evolve over time. Having a conversation, again, the immediacy of I need to change this person's mind in this moment just escalates that intensity. And in relationships, especially with somebody that you love and somebody that you're committed to and being in a relationship with them for a long time, we don't need to solve it now in these next 15 minutes.
So maybe thinking more of like planting seeds as opposed to being right.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I mean, if you feel the need to be right, then you're going to do more damage to your relationship. Because then you're trying to prove that you're right. You're not trying to understand the other person.
You know, Denise, as you're talking, it makes me think about the Trinity. When we're in fight or flight, it's just the two of us. When we can get into that other part of our brain, we leave room for the Holy Spirit, and that's where change happens. So we've got to get out of that fight or flight mode. That's mm-hmm. really helpful. Let's thank Denise for being with us today. I hope that you have found this conversation with Denise Warner helpful. May God bless you as you encounter and disagree with some of the people you love.